マクロスシリーズ最新作はミュージカル。2062年マクロス29戦団を舞台にミス・マクロスコンテストをめぐり交差する若者たちの思いと夢、数々の名曲とともに新たな歌姫たちが紡ぐ完全新作ストーリー。ここに集う歌の力、マクロス・ザ・ミュージカルチャー。チケット好評発売中。
So let's get back into it, gentlemen.
One drink, does anyone want something?
Oh, okay. Well, we can order drinks. Alright, so we're back and we've got drinks with more on the way, which is the way it should always be. But look, let's get into some of these events, gentlemen, because while it's the end of the 30th anniversary, this has just been a monster couple of months. This is bringing it all together. This is really the apex of it. And I want to start off with the music culture, because I am of the opinion that, with the potential exception of Macross 30, which we don't really know enough about yet, I think the music culture is the most well-done and interesting new addition to the overall Macross universe. But I'm going to hand it over to our resident musical expert, karaoke maestro himself, Richard. Walk us through the music culture.
Okay, so there was a big event at Tokyo Dome City.
Mm-hmm.
Tokyo Dome, of course, is the big baseball stadium. And at first I thought that the music culture was going to be at Tokyo Dome. And I was like, wow, that's, you know, because that's reserved for really, really big, big performers. But no, it was at a little theater that was near Tokyo Dome. So the stuff that they had kind of around the music culture, there were posters with a really great Tenjin painting.
Yeah, of the SDF-1 punching Tenjin. A Ferris wheel.
Yes. Yes, Daedalus attacking a Ferris wheel. And as Renato said, it's a pity that they had to put a picture of Cheryl and Ronka in front of this gorgeous painting.
Well, the third Valkyries book, whenever it comes out.
Right. And and so there were posters for that all over. There was a stamp rally. And the stamp rally was weird. It was in two parts. So the first part ran from the end of September to the middle of October, which is during which time the music culture did its run. And then there was a second part, which was for the last couple weeks of October. And there was absolutely nothing else Macross going on at Tokyo Dome City for the second one. So it was 500 yen to do the stamp rally, and you got the booklet, and you got a clear file of the Tenjin picture with only Ronka on it.
Right.
Gwen, let's see, Adrian, you were there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The first time we...
No, you met up with us later.
Right before the actual
music culture.
That was
after the music culture was over.
Right. So it was...
Yeah, that was when we got the August tapes.
Right.
which we'll get
which to. Which is a different story. So it was, what, Gwen, my friend Emmy, and I wandering around this kind of amusement park area trying to find the stamps, which took forever.
Right, of course, the second time around, it's easy as anything, right. But the first time you do it, they're in real... I mean, one of them was next to a toilet.
Right.
And another was in the back among these old, like, redemption games. It was just... They were hard to find, but I was impressed with the array of stamps.
Yes.
And we have
yes.
food and drinks.
Yes.
はい。
お待たせいたしました。ウーロン茶でございます。これだけですね。
ウーロン茶です。
梅ジンジャーです。混ぜてお待ちください。コカ・コーラでございます。お待たせいたしました。鶏の唐揚げ粉でございます。
鶏から。
はい、テレグラスお下げいたします。
いきします。
So now you have food, Richard.
I've got food.
Ice cream coming.
So the stamps were in really odd places. They did have a nice array of them, though, for the first, and they were different for each part of the stamp
for the
rally.
First half and the second half, and they were mixed. There was half of them were music culture characters, and half were Macross characters.
Yeah, so for the first stamp rally, okay, there were 9 possible stamps you could get. You only had to get 7 of them. 6 of them were free, and then 3 of them were things that you had to pay for.
Right. So if you bought, like, a drink at a certain cafe, you'd get something.
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera.
And, the free ones... You had, for the first ones, you had Hikaru, Minmei, and Misa stamps, and then 3 of the characters from the music culture. And then for the ones that you had to spend money on, it was Alto, Cheryl, and Ranka.
Right.
And then for the second stamp rally, the ones that you had to pay for were still Alto, Cheryl, and Ranka.
Mm-hmm.
But you had, for the free stamps, it was Basara, Milane, and Gubaba. Oddly enough.
Hmm.
And the second trio was Mao, Sharon Apple, and someone else. Who am I forgetting? I'm forgetting.
No, I think you've mentioned
the one that was by the toilet was Ishtar.
Thank you.
Can you chuck this over? Oh, yeah. Sorry. But yeah, so we did the stamp rally, and basically the stamp rally netted you you could go in the draw for a pin, little badge, and I got Cheryl every time I did it, which was annoying.
Well, the second time I really lucked out because I got the pin and there was a little piece of paper that was covering it, and I was like, well, what pin did I get? And the paper said B on it, and that means I won the B prize, which was a bunch of posters from the Crossover Live.
Right.
So that was highly worth it all.
Well done. Mm-hmm. So we did that. We went to one of the restaurants that was doing a tie-up collaboration with the music culture, and we had a pine salad,
which was terrible,
and a basara curry,
mm-hmm.
which was pretty darn hot.
I like that. I didn't order it, but I tried Emmy's and I thought it was good.
Yeah, we're doing the whole, oh, we've eaten pine salad and we're dead. And the staff at the venue actually knew what we were doing and they were laughing, which I
right.
thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we did all this and we met up with Adrian and we ran into the number one Macross fan
mm-hmm.
who was there, as to be expected. And also ran in, afterwards we ran into John, but I'll get to that later. So we went in, and once you go in, there's a huge poster of the music culture. There's the normal bouquets from various interested parties, including a giant Starlight Nuttall.
Right.
There was a small glass case showing upcoming figures and the Fokker theme 29. There was a TV playing trailers for FB7, and there was a merch stand. You get past that, we went in. So we got our seats. Now, we ended up being, was it second row?
Second row.
Which, I mean, we were a bit off-center. So
we were right in front of the speakers.
But we were way closer to the front than I was expecting.
Yeah.
Which was pretty darn cool. So it was a relatively small auditorium. And it seemed that it was only filling up, really, the first floor seats. The balconies were empty.
I think some of the balconies were actually closed.
Right.
The place was probably about half full, if that.
And I noticed what
I would say the floor was half full.
No, the floor was pretty full.
No, the middle section of the floor was full. The two mm-hmm. side sections only went maybe a quarter of the way up.
Oh, okay.
It was just sporadic.
Right.
Well, we went on the Saturday, so it was day 6 of 8. Performance 6 of 8. And a lot of people I spoke with afterwards mentioned that their performance had really come together. Right. Like, they'd gotten a lot better at it, especially because, you know, we had the drama of not one, but two people dropping out. One only, you know...
The day before.
Saikakanda only, yeah, within 48 hours of the play opening. And because of that, you know, a lot of people said by the latter performances, they'd improved a lot. They'd come together as a group. So it was a small auditorium, and what happened also, they had on-the-day tickets that you buy at the door, which were only, I think it was 2,000 yen, 2,100 yen.
Right, like, yeah.
They were really cheap for balcony seats right up the back because they were trying to get people to come back and see it again. But, you know, initial tickets were like 6,800 or 6,800 yen. And John, who we ran into, now John is this Macross fan who is on the boards but rarely jumps in, of unbelievable luck. I think we've mentioned before because we've seen him talk to Megumi in the middle of a concert, being in the front row. I've seen him in the front row of at least one Blu-ray I own. And, you know, he always turns up and somehow gets these amazing seats. He, from the beginning, bought brand new tickets for every single one. So that's $70 to $80 times 8 for something he didn't know what it was going to be. Congrats to him for supporting the franchise. I'm all about that, but even by my standards, I was like, wow, that's a lot of money. Yeah. You can buy a box set with that, Renato.
Well, I think we all walked out, because it turns out that from everything it could have been, and as awful as it really could have been, and I was halfway fearing it would be, it turned out to be really good.
Right, yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, I wouldn't have minded maybe seeing it a second time from a balcony.
Right.
For a cheap seat. But, I mean, a full price once was enough for me, I felt. But do you want to go over the basics?
I've already gone over this in detail on the boards. But the story is set in 2062 on the Macross 29 fleet, which may or may not be connected to the Macross 30 website.
Right.
Backstory. They never really make it clear. The fleet is having enormous economic difficulties. There is a group of, like, a almost like a neo-Nazi group of Zentradi who are gaining popularity. So you've got the main characters. There's the delivery boy for Nyan Nyan.
Ash.
There's Sakura, the girl who wants to be an idol. There is Vigo, who used to be good friends with Ash and Sakura, but is now the leader of Neo Zentron. Ash had a run-in with them once before. He really wanted to be a dancer, and he got basically got his foot shot off.
Right, there was an incident where a Zentradi who'd kind of gone out of control stole a gun and went into a school, and Sakura tried to sing him down.
Which almost worked.
Almost worked, but didn't. And basically, long and short of it is that Vigo wrestled with him and Ash ended up getting shot in the leg.
So that's the primary
right.
plot.
Should we just give the basics rather than order? So, I mean, basically right. then what happens is Vigo decides that he wants to destroy Neo Zentron. So he goes, he works himself into the organization. And
this is all revealed.
Revealed later on, right. He works himself into the organization and realizes at some point that even if he destroys it, another group will pop up to take its place. So he's better off redirecting it into being a more productive group and helping society. However, things don't go as smooth as he wants them to. But he doesn't tell anyone this. So when, of course, Ash sees that he's running against the mayor, like in elections pretty much, and he's the leader of this militaristic group from which the guy who shot his leg came from, he kind of is not happy.
Right.
Yeah.
The mayor, by the way, best character in the whole thing.
He started off by imitating the SCF-1.
Yes, he lay down which was the cruiser mode, and then he said he was going to go through a transformation, and so he just
he did the music too. It was like
right. He also sang the Macross theme song at one point.
Right.
That was the beginning of Act 2, right?
I think it was.
So. Yeah.
So he had a daughter. So his daughter was Charlotte, who was originally played by Sikonda. And she is rich. She has Minmay's original or replica of Minmay's Miss Macross chair in her room.
Right.
And a cabinet full of Valks. And she wants to hold a Miss Macross contest. And she's constantly singing Minmay songs.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the mayor's not too popular. So her brainwave is, I'll hold a Miss Macross contest. Of course, I will win, she says, which means I'll be famous and Daddy will be really popular for holding the Miss Macross contest. And the Zentradi can't do anything because this is like hitting the win button. Like, they can be talking about how messed up society is all they like, but we say we're doing a Miss Macross contest, we win.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you've got, in the Neo Zentron group, you've got Vigo, who is the head. You've got his sister, Daryl.
Right.
Which, as Gwyn pointed out, is probably the first Zentradi brother-sister.
Right.
First Zentradi siblings we've ever seen. And then there's the manager of Nyan Nyan, who goes way back with Vigo's sister.
Right.
And her name is Sonia Dosel.
And she's everyone's favorite in this
movie. She's certainly my favorite. And
not mine, Scarlet.
Okay. And yeah, she was really...
She was great, right?
Really,
and then,
great.
And then you have Elle, who's a cyborg... Oh no! What was she? She was a robot.
She's
a robot, but there was a name for her—a cyberoid.
Cyberoid, yeah.
That Ash picked up in the junk heap, like Battle Angel Leader, and basically has been working on repairing. And she wants to sing because she wants human emotions, and she's jealous of Sakura because Sakura comes and hangs out at Nyan Nyan where Ash is doing deliveries at every day because she's worried about him because he's never been himself since he got shot. And as a result, she's not really singing anymore either.
Right.
So, the long and short of it, there's a subgroup within Vigo's group who doesn't want to reform Neo Zentran and who basically hold a coup and decide to use Daryl's performance in the Miss Macross contest as a focal point to kick off a rebellion.
And this is... there is a very long... fight at the end as Neo Zentron attacks the Miss Macross contest. And there a few things were kind of cool about this. I liked how the Neo Zentron soldiers actually ran out in the audience and they were pointing their guns at us.
Right.
So they were holding us hostage. That was cool. A lot of the fight choreography was good. I know you guys thought that the ending fight lasted way too long.
Well, put it this way, there were some really good scenes in overall. I mean, just speaking generally, I was really impressed they only gave us one dance scene with Ash and Vigo. Because I was really worried they were going to go into this whole bromance dancing over and over. Because, you know, somehow they think dancing is a respectable occupation. And it's got to be said that after the end fight, the resolution to the story... is that they managed to stop Vigo with fighting and singing. And basically the mayor decides, like, well, you guys have culture now, you can dance, so we're going to re-hold the Miss Macross contest. Send the winner out among the fleets with all this merchandising to make money for our depressed economy. And they're going to need backup dancers. So your sentence is not to go to prison, but to be backup dancers.
Yes.
Which kind of makes a lot of sense in the Macross universe. And of course, Ash is like, well, actually, I've got a cyborg leg now, so I'm going to go as well.
Right.
And everyone lived happily ever after, apparently. But, you know, the final battle was... I thought it was too long, yeah. And they reused, like, the medley.
Right.
Right, the Nyan Nyan medley.
Yeah.
Which we've heard before.
Right.
I...
Oh, where's your pocket?
Ah, yes.
You can take my pocket.
It's small. I also smell salt.
Okay. So,
I have ice cream. Hell yeah.
I have to say that as good as the musical was, and I thought it was very good, as you said, like for the ending, they reused the medley from Wings of Farewell,
right?
Using it in exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The ending was kind of a letdown, but then I realized later just how much of this seems kind of derivative of other Macross series. Basically, the whole setting and like the background for the plot, I think, is very similar to the last 9 episodes of the original TV series, mm-hmm. the aftermath
runs. Yeah.
In the, you know, you've got like a kind of depressed place where Zentradi are beginning to act up again. The main love triangle.
It's very Macross Plus.
Exactly. And I think having like L the Cyberoid, that was something really new.
Hmm.
But you know, we've all seen the robot who wants to learn how to, you know, right. What is this thing, love?
And in the Miss Macross contest, she did a Sharon Apple song,
right?
Which was so fitting and great, right. You know.
Yeah. So, but the music was good. It was all.
It's a Macross Plus song.
Well, yeah. The music was good. Everyone sang really well. The songs were well chosen. There were only 2 original songs. Mm-hmm. One was the Neo Zentron anthem, and the other one was L's introductory song, which I remember liking, but I don't remember it at all.
We should point out here that the guys next to us are singing Virgin Story from FB7.
Yes. And doing a better job of it than I was.
Because they have a girl singing with them?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, overall, yeah, it was great. I'm really happy I went. I really enjoyed it. The whole Tokyo Dome city thing was kind of annoying, but kind of cool. You're the only one who actually rode in the Ferris wheel.
Right.
Or wait, no, I guess Roshi did too, right? You were in the Ferris wheel at Tokyo Dome City.
Yeah.
Also.
I shot the movie, but I deleted that because of the copyright.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So what did you think of the music culture?
Hmm? Sorry, I don't want it.
Oh, you didn't see it?
But I went to the Tokyo Dome to this event, and it was so impressive because Tokyo Dome City Hall is old, also the May 8th and 9th Tsunami concert.
Mm.
Yeah? And I was surprised Rocky Star's musical was held there. And Tokyo Dome was I went to Tokyo Dome from Aichi Prefecture when I was 10 years old. So nostalgic. And I went to Tokyo Dome itself to see Michael Jackson in 1992 or 1993. And I also went there to see Yellow Magic Orchestra.
Nice.
In 1992.
So you're very familiar with the location.
Yes. Yeah. Tokyo Dome is so, so popular because Hiroshima,
mm-hmm.
Tokyo Dome で僕と握手しましょう。And、of course、Yomiuri Giants home stadium.、
Mm-hmm. No, there was a match on the day I saw the Music Culture, so all the fans were lined up for the baseball.、Mm-hmm. It was really crowded.
Yeah. So Adrian, any thoughts on the Music Culture? I mean, you were there.
As far as it being a musical, it was interesting what they put together using like a Macross theme, and you know, the stories were pretty much familiar as far as like Macross Plus type of、mm-hmm. characters and the medley at the end. And the first, because there was a first act and a second act, and the first act was actually really interesting and the pacing was really well done.So when you went into intermission, you kind of went like, hey, this isn't so bad. When you went back, it followed other Macross storylines at that point, and it just seemed more repetitive. And by the time you get to the finale, I was pretty ready to go.
Okay.
So the big dance number at the end was kind of just something to watch. It wasn't very interesting.
Hmm.
And The negative things about it were kind of how the designs were all over the place.
When you say designs, what are you referring to?
Well, all the girls that were idol characters looked like Macross Frontier-ish idol characters.
Okay.
Elle, her original costume design, she looked like she came straight out of Yataman.
Yeah.
She looked like a square, chunky robot with the old wind-up key in the back of her back.
Right.
So it was totally Tatsunoko Pro design. Why the hell is that there? And then when she comes out later, it's more of like a really strange, futuristic Sharon Apple dress, but it didn't really work.
It was not quite like the one they put in the promotional materials was a bit different.
It didn't look anything like the illustration or what she actually is wearing in the brochure, the pamphlet. Then there's just the stage props, where the Zentradi uniforms.
Right.
They didn't reflect the original Zentradi uniforms. These ones were white and gold opposed to gray and green, dark green.
Right.
Which is fine because they're newer, yeah. So, but it still had that kind of feel.
Right.
But then when they went to the hall, when they basically held everyone up hostage and... They came out in basically black spandex and BMX biker
gear. Elbow pads, knee pads,
and
helmets.
You know, guns that look like they taped together with duct tape. And
the budget was certainly obvious.
Yeah, so all the budget went to the girls. Everything else kind of just...
That's true to life.
Yeah. You know. So anyways, just, yeah, some of the props were lackluster.
Mm-hmm.
And... So that didn't really have an effect on how the first act went. The first act was great. The second act just kind of fizzled, I thought.
Right.
And it was something to see once, and I don't think they'll ever do anything like this again.
No, I haven't heard any real number. I think they must have lost money, though, because it was, yeah, like you said, at the very least, the balconies were consistently empty.
Yeah.
If not part of the main floor. So... It's just kind of like, maybe they broke even. I hope so. The stage sets, such that they were, there weren't many of them, but the ones I had were good, I thought. Like, they had the junk heap where Ash hung out at, and with Elle, the robot. You had the Nyan Nyan store. You had the base for Neo Zentron. They had these quite cool, simple but cool sets. And when the girls did their numbers, they were great. Although none of the girls did a full song. They did, like... maybe a third or a half a song each at max. And then halfway through, of course, they got interrupted by a hijack, which was a shame, because I would really like to see an album of some of those singers covering some of those songs.
Well, the acoustic, was it Ai Boite Masuka, was good. That was probably
And yet they released a clip of that online beforehand. It was terrible. That preview clip they put online. And the real version was good, yeah.
That was probably one of the most interesting scenes, actually. For me, yeah, I went because I had a ticket and I just got back from the States, and it was fun to go to, but at the same time, it was, you have to really be invested in the Macross
right
franchise to actually want to sit through it.
It was a lot of fan service. You know, I mean, yeah, you could pick what influence from what series, what song from what series, you know, which character is this one related to. And I think I'm happy it was done, but the fact that it doesn't seem like they're going to bring it out on DVD or anything. We didn't even get an album out of it, which is what I was hoping for. It's just one of those really, like, blink and you miss it kind of events. So, yeah. But, all right, I think that's enough on the music culture, guys. So, next up, FB7.
One thing that I want to get clear about the movie is that, okay, something
it's
like
not a movie.
Well, something like
it's a clip movie.
Yeah, but something like Eva Q, or even like Evangelion Death and Rebirth, which was also a clip movie, was, I mean, that was kind of confusing. But there was a certain amount of a structure to it. But FB7 seemed extremely random, and maybe it wasn't, but it wasn't interesting enough for me to go back and watch it again and try to figure out what the pattern was. It was completely random, right?
It wasn't. I'll explain that in a second.
Okay.
First of all, let's talk about the movie itself.
Right.
So, Buster, you saw FB7, right? No?
FB7? I talked about FB7 before.
Right.
Yeah. And I said, you know, my opinion. So civil opinion.
Okay. You don't have to be civil. You can
yeah,
be.
Yeah.
Right. I know someone who saw it who loved it. He said he was crying at the end.
I was crying at the end.
We all were.
Yeah.
Kamori's name was never credited on the FB7 movie.
Mm-hmm.
That I thought why? what I thought was Kamori gets out of somewhere from FB7 because the acquaintances making a great movie series, but he didn't want to compare to others, and because just making a movie and earn easy money, Big West thought that, but Kamori hate to be thought about just like this, so that Kamori hate to join the FP7. And this year, so many rival movies were released in Japan: Madoka Magica, Code Geass series, Tiger and Bunny, of course, Evangelion, Yamato. Every anime studio want to earn money to make movies. The tendency is just like that, and the Big West thought to earn money easily. So that I hate the what Big West wanted to do.
I think it was basically. It was basically a promotion for the Blu-ray box, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone disagrees with that. So it was 90 minutes. Basically, I think Amino was given the budget for 15 minutes of animation and said, draw this into 90 minutes. So it was all, like, primarily just 7 footage blown up. Granted, they touched some of it up. It looked nights on the big screen.
Yeah, yeah.
With these small clips in between where the cast of Frontier were together and being mysteriously delivered these video tapes of Macross 7 to watch because no one seemed to know what happened to the fleet. No one knew the details, they just knew there was an M7 incident mm-hmm. and the Bussard cooperated with mm-hmm. the military. And there's very little information on what happened to the fleet after that or to Firebomber. And Ozma, being the established Firebomber fan he is, wants to know if Bussard is alive or dead. And so when he starts getting these tapes, which are very meta because they've got eye catchers in them, I think it was at the opening makes an appearance at some point. Like, who edited these tapes? Where is right. this footage coming from?
All the to be continued.
Right. But in a way that ties into Kawamori's view of things. They're not getting footage of M7. They're getting the series of M7 right. that probably broadcast in the M7 fleet as a recreation of events, as a TV drama. At the end they find out what happened and who was delivering these mysterious cassette tapes, videotapes to them the whole time.
Hatsumi! Gavel.
Yeah. No real reason.
No.
He just...
No. But Renato had a good point about that. You don't remember? Okay.
No.
Okay. Renato said that... Told me that he thought it was kind of a good idea to put him there because at the end of Macross 7, you know, Capitano Nietzsche's kind of reformed, but... What about Gabble? He's still just kind of a jerk at the end of the series, and so it showed, okay, you know, he's a better person now.
Right. And then, at the end, of course, you had the music video.
Right.
For the new medley, which is of course, Cheryl and Ranka doing Firebomber songs with, mysteriously, some backing vocals from Bussard and Milene, but there's no lead up to that because
right.
there are all these opportunities to work into the story. It's like, well, maybe this happened before they did the breakout of Alcatraz, or maybe this is after Alcatraz, so they wanted to do it again. There's no planning. It's just like, oh, we've watched the end of the tape, that's cool, hey, let's have a concert, you know. Love me too. Listen to that song. Someone singing the original Macross in the background. That's awesome. Thank you, sir. You want to get rid of this? I'm sorry, I'm eating you, man. Alright. Wow, someone's bringing the classics outside. But so there's no excuse for this music video. It just happens completely out of the blue.
There's no excuse for this movie.
Well, right. No, there's no excuse for the movie. The music video, I thought, was good.
It was good, but it's like there's no... It was a mini concert they supposedly held on the rooftop of Ranko's apartment building.
Right.
And suddenly they're also riding the rooftops of trams, there's posters, they have custom-made Valks. It went from a little concert to a music video with no explanation, no lead-up.
And judging from the characters' costumes, although I don't know if they thought, I don't know if the creators thought about this at all, but, I mean, Cheryl's wearing the same outfit that she wore in Episode 3. Ranka still has her exclusive girls' school uniform. On the one that she got kicked out of after Episode 4. So it's clearly meant to be set at the beginning of the series, which really makes no sense.
Well, I noticed that too, because the movie happens like over a span of like 4 days or something like that. Because characters keep coming and going.
Right.
And they're wearing
like
different
after
clothes.
Work and, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not just it happens in one day, it happens over a couple of days. So it seems to fit more into the television storyline opposed to the movies. And recently they're re-airing Frontier on Sunday nights. And the episode before Pine Cake, there's a few references of Seven by Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
And because Bobby references Proto Devlin. Right. They also reference Basada, and there's all these... and no, I think it was Clan references something from Seven as well.
Yeah, I think so, she references... The Basara reference, that's where they're saying, like...
Bobby actually...
Yeah, but that's where they're saying that Ronka is, like, the new Minmay, and then Bobby's like, oh, that's too old-fashioned. She's more like, you know, that's Basara. And then they're like, yeah, that's also old-fashioned.
So at that point of the story, which is, like, episode 14, 15...
Right.
They bring those characters... They talk about those characters.
Right.
So if it did happen in any timeline, it would make more sense if it happened in the TV show. Time.
Right.
Right. Well, the thing is, I went and saw it twice.
Really?
Because the second time I managed to get a ticket for the Budai Aisatsu. For the director and cast meet and greet. So
was everyone throwing stuff at them?
So Amino was there, Fukuyama was there, of all things. I was like, what? And Fukuyama was actually really nervous. It said it was his first time actually doing this kind of just talk show kind of thing in front of people.
That's not true.
Not in a cinema?
You said in front of people.
Well, yeah, like as in a Budai Aisatsu in the cinema. Yeah. They had the Basara guitar there. Who else was there? Was it Megumi or was it Ayendo? I've actually forgotten. I think it was Megumi. But either way... Amino had... I was like, how is he going to defend this, you know? And
how's he
going
to defend this?
What made me interested was he was basically like... He didn't come up with the idea for the movie. He was given the movie.
Oh, yeah.
It had been decided upon before it was given to him. So it's not like he desperately wanted to cash in on this. So it's obviously, as Bun-san was saying, the Big West won money and they said to Amino, here, make the movie.
And he said, how else are we going to sell these Blu-ray boxes?
Yeah, exactly. You know? And honestly, the idea he had, while I don't necessarily agree with how he implemented it, was interesting. He said, it's not supposed to be a clip movie of the series or a summary of the plot. It's supposed to be this hybrid concert. He picked parts of the plot where they were playing songs that people liked and were popular. So the idea was, he said, I wanted people to stand up in the cinema. I want people to come back again and again, and to the point they knew that it's a 15-minute mark, they're going to play Holy Lonely Light quick and start waving glow sticks and stuff, which is complete bullshit. But he claims that was his idea behind it.
And the music sounded great.
It did.
The sound was really good.
I was very, very impressed with that, especially because the previous week, I had gone to watch Led Zeppelin's movie, Celebration Day.
How did you get tickets to that?
Online.
Okay, because like one of my friends tried to get tickets for it and...
Oh, because they only showed it nationwide for 2 days.
Okay.
Also, I applied for the cinema, which is kind of outside from... quite a way out from the center of town.
Okay.
But close to my house, so I knew that there would be seats there.
Okay.
Anyway, the sound... was good, but it wasn't good enough. I wasn't really impressed for the Led Zeppelin one. And then the next week, I went with you to see FP7, and I was very, very impressed. It was very good.
But for us, when we went to see it, because Adrian and Gwen had seen it, I think, a couple
so
days before.
Weekend, yeah.
When Renato and I went, well, for one thing, the souvenir stand was completely out of everything.
There wasn't all that. Well, the big thing I sold out when we were there were anything with Milan on it.
Milan t-shirts.
Milan t-shirts just went.
Right.
And
the Milan t-shirts were there at our one, right?
Yeah.
And that was the only thing that was there.
That was the only thing.
Wow. Okay.
There were no programs. There was nothing.
So I grabbed a program, but the program was half advertising for merch.
Yeah. Okay.
Because where else are they going to put it? No.
Right. But the one thing that happened to us that was really great.
Here we go. You guys got the best musical interlude in a way.
Yeah.
Hold on, before we go there.
Well, wait. I know what you're going to say, and I'm going to bring it in. Earlier that day, Renato and I had been in Tokyo Dome City as I was doing the second part of the stamp rally, and we met up with Adrian, who had just gotten back from the States, bringing a gift for Renato, which...
Thanks to Mike.
Yes, a care package.
Mike
is a very nice guy.
Mike being Matt Alt's favorite jorky guy when he brings beer in the middle of a podcast. Anyway.
Yes, that's what he's famous for.
So Adrian brought all of the videotapes. And this actually ties in with FB7, doesn't it?
Videotapes.
VHS, right? Yeah. VHS tapes of U.S. rendition of Orgus.
U.S. rendition is a U.S. rendition. Awful.
The U.S. rendition's rendition. So that Renato was carrying around this bag of 8 Orgus VHS tapes. As we go to the movie theater, and as the movie ended, after the credits finished, we stand up. Renato puts his Orgus bag in the aisle, and this guy is rushing from the back row.
Some punk coming. Come on.
Yeah, we had like kind of like big rock hair and really. And I said this on the forums, but I have to say it again, one of the nicest leather bomber jackets I have ever seen. It was really, really beautiful. Trips over the bag of Orgus.
The bag of Orgus. I think that's the name of my new band.
Bag of Orgus.
That's the name of this podcast.
Yes.
Done.
All okay. Right, keep going. So, trips over the bag of Orgus, and Renato turns and says, "Oh, hey, how are you?" And the guy's like, "Oh, I'm fine. How are you doing?" And Ron's like, "Oh, you know," and they're chatting with each other for a bit, but the guy's obviously in a hurry. Runs off, and then, turns to me. Before he ran off, turned to me, bowed. I bowed back, then ran off. And Renato said, "You know who that was, don't you?" I was like, "No." And he said, "That was Fukuyama. That was Basara." It's like, oh, shit. So.
And you did have your Gubaba sticker that signed this.
Right. So, I tried to leave quickly so that we could run into him again. Walking fast, but trying not to run. We hit the escalator, and then Renato said, "Well, he probably took the elevator." Because we didn't see him on the escalator at all. Later, I was thinking about it. I'm like, you know, probably the reason he was rushing to get out of there was because he probably really had to go to the bathroom. So,
okay,
we probably should have tried to corner him there. But
I don't advise that.
Right. But when we got down, we did see him again. And Renato, if you want to take over at this point.
No, that's okay. You
okay. He was going down the escalator, and Renato shouted out, like, "So, what'd you think of the movie?" And his response was, it was the first time I saw it."
In other words, too soon to make an opinion, because I don't want to tell you what I really think of it, right?
Exactly. By this point, however, and this part, Renato, I think you really should take over for, because Renato's ever keen eye was roving the lobby, and he saw someone else
there. Yeah. So we couldn't talk to Fukuyama anymore, because as he was responding to us, he was actually on the escalator back downstairs.
So he's like, "I thought it was good. See you, goodbye."
That is actually what it was.
Yeah.
That's what it was, because we were on the in the foyer, and right. I only spotted him as he'd stepped on the escalator, and I said, "So, what did you think of the movie?" And he was obviously timing his response. He was like, so glad to be on that escalator on the way down. Yeah, first time I saw it. Sorry. That's all I can say.
What was your opinion of the movie?
I thought it was fantastic.
Well, hang on. Let's wait till you finish this story. Then I want to hear what you thought of it. Especially someone who owns a box set. Because the movie did its job. So, yeah.
I did not buy it because of the movie. Anyway, there was a guy in his 50s, I think, on the other side of this balcony that overlooked the downward escalator. And someone's playing "Let's Go to Kinukuyo" on the other side.
Yeah, we're getting more and more. I'm going to go barge in on one of those rooms. Anyway, yeah.
Anyway, He looked very familiar, and I thought it looked a lot like Izubuchi, the director of Yamato 2199, designer of Pat Labor, all this stuff. But I couldn't be sure, and I decided to go up and ask him. And it was. And I was saying, oh, okay, well, we met last month, or whenever it was, a couple of months ago, because he was over at the Ishiguro Noboru Memorial.
Right, the one you talked about last time, right.
Yeah. And then I said, you know, I was... I had heard from Tim Eldred that he and Tim... I don't know if they were close or whatever, but...
Well, they met.
Yeah, I mean, they've met several times for interviews and whatever. And Tim was in the comics, or he has a character named after him.
Long story short, Tim had a character named after him by the 2199 team. He is the American ambassador for the UN, who is a middle-aged woman.
Yes.
Now, in the anime, they don't say her name, but in the manga, they say Eldred. No. Representative Eldred.
Yeah.
So... Tim is officially a middle-aged woman, so please continue.
Tim is officially a middle-aged. And I asked Izubuchi about him. So, you know my friend Tim? And he said, no, I'm not sure I know who you're talking about. And so the rest of the conversation was me trying to explain to him who Tim Eldred was. You know, he drew the Star Blazers comics, and he did this, he did that. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I have to go now. So, Tim... Next time you come, you have to meet Izubuchi again and explain to him
who you are
and why you were being shunned.
Or
apologize for anything you may have said to offend him.
Alright, so what did you think of the movie?
I was laughing halfway through it. Yeah. I mean, the idea, like out loud, man, the idea that you could put Gigil's face and high definition on a 15 meter screen going or whatever his laughing style was.
You do a really good version of Gigil.
Yes. Oh my god. Anyway, I just don't understand what the thought process was behind this. I wouldn't have been okay with another 30 minute movie.
Right.
If it had been all new footage.
Right. All the music video at the end of it could have been a limited edition or special edition or extra cost version of the single, which had a DVD with that music clip on it at the very end.
Yeah.
I mean, just...
And I would have been happier if they had used the money for that, if they had just made Cheryl and Ronka sing Firebomber as an album.
Right.
That would have been good, you know?
So what did you think of the actual medley?
The medley, I think it's a little overproduced.
It reeked of me of like, we're trying to recapture that Kunal medley magic, but we can't quite do it. But it was fun. And towards the second half, they had more cheer and Fukuyama than I expected.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I like it. I wish it had been a little more guitar and a little less synthesizer. But
The Virgin Story was a much better half of that single.
Yeah, yeah. But the medley's not bad.
Yeah. I just don't get it. I mean, all of the voice actors from Macross 7 are alive, except for maybe Gipelnich. Was it really that hard to just...
Well, they had no money. I just think they had no money. I think this was the concept. We need a promotional piece. Here's enough budget for 15 minutes of
Hayashi
new...
Hayashi really expensive these days.
What?
No.
They got him for the game.
He's doing the game. They're all doing the game.
That, which is something we'll get to, but... Well, Adrian, any fun?
My friend's playing in the background now.
Yeah, this is great. I hope some of this gets picked up. We're surrounded by Macross music. I could sit here all day. Any final thoughts on the FB7, Adrian? I mean, you saw it. I mean, it didn't need to exist. But seeing that footage on the big screen, just as the experience of it, was a fun thing to do.
And I did kind of tear up towards the end.
Really?
When you realized how much the ticket cost, no?
No, I mean, when you get to the last episode with... For some reason, I always choke up at the, like, Yamayo! Gingayo! Ore no dakike! And it worked again this time. I do know people who loved the movie. I did talk to someone who really, really enjoyed it.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
I don't know
why.
Adrian?
I mean, I've said this before. I have sat through all of Macross 7 in the 90s. I would never do it again. The only thing I got out of sitting through this movie...
It looks fantastic.
I don't care.
Hey, bring that box set over. We'll make them watch it.
Hey, I know what you're going through, because I wasn't prepared to watch either the original show or Macross 7 until a couple of months
ago. The original?
Yeah. Because I was watching my... I have the Madman version, the Australian...
So do I. That's a little white box set, same as the ADV.
It looks good, yeah. It's the same as the Animego. And I tried to watch it, and I just couldn't do it. It just wasn't interesting to me anymore. And Macross 7 the same.
So Renato will no longer be appearing on Macross Speaker Podcast.
No, but then I watched it on Blu-ray, and it's like seeing the show again. Even though it's the same show...
Well, you were
it's like
seeing it again. What?
For the first time again.
There we go.
Like, afresh. Seriously, it makes all the difference. It makes much more difference than you think.
I know it makes a difference, because I watched it in the 90s, like, 10th generation fan copy, fan subs, washed out colors.
Yeah, me too.
You know. So, seeing it in the theater was great, and it reminded me of a lot of stuff that... seeing it in the theater, they reference a lot of stuff I forgot that happened.
Yeah.
Like the whole the fifth Macross fleet and all that stuff.
Was that
Yeah, they talked about it when they found all the people in the farm. So it's a good way to kind of go back and, I forgot that kind of stuff happened, because all I really remembered coming out of it was Max Maria, X-Dor, and I like Firebomber, and forget the rest.
Well, yeah, but, I mean... And if you watch this movie, it's not as if you understand the whole of the series, because
it's chopped up.
The love triangle is between Basara, Cyril, and Giggle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gamlin is barely in this movie. I don't remember.
Yeah, he shows up at the very, very end, like when Basara's in the coma.
Yeah.
That's the first time that Gamlin shows up.
I'm not really sure what this is supposed to be about, because this isn't really introducing the show to people who have never heard
it.
I think it definitely fails as trying to get Frontier fans to watch 7.
So they need to try again?
They should.
But the whole thing with...
They shouldn't.
The new Frontier footage was... I don't know, some of the things they did with the VHS tape... They go to Akihabara inside.
Yeah, you know, to find the player.
So there's little touches they did in the new animation that were kind of interesting. The editing of the old footage was like here and there. And why did they do all the character introductions in the middle of it, opposed to as it just went on? Yeah, it's like they broke away, and then this person, with the Japanese explanation of their character name on the bottom. So when you get to the end, it was like, whoa, okay, great, that's kind of cool, something to do. The unfortunate thing about the whole thing, this being old footage mixed with new animation, this has lowered the bar, and for you Robotech fans out there, you finally have hope that Love Live Alive, or whatever you want to call it, may surpass something that's made of, you know, the newest Macross movie. Because I would have to say I'm more interested in seeing that new, Love Live Alive than I was FB7.
I don't know. You could also say that it set a new low standard. And therefore, if this Robotech movie comes out, we'll have to measure it against this standard and see just how far low it can go.
One final
amazing
comment.
Oh my god, it's even worse than FB7.
Oh my god. Let's pray for that. But the bar has been lowered, and you know, Harmony Gold, if you're listening, you've got a good shot.
Nothing else to do.
Okay, that said, Love Live Alive has been in production now for
20 years.
Yes. Like, I think they announced, like, it's been at least 2 years. This was clearly cobbled together in, like...
It's been more than that, because they announced it, like, 2009 or 10.
Right.
And they said it'll be coming out in 2011.
Right.
And we're in December 2012 now.
Right.
Well, it's coming out at the same time as the Shadow Rising, or whatever, the next Shadow Chronicles.
Yeah. Right. Batman clearly stole the time.
But FB7, the first announcement we got for that was May. And that's when it still said Ozma meets Firebomber.
And that never happened in the goddamn movie.
No, no. And that would have been cool if that had happened. But yeah, I can't imagine this thing took more than
Ozma meets Gavel doesn't really
Right. So it had to have been put together in basically 5 months or less.
Now we've got Planet Dance going.
Well, they were planning it. They were planning it from at least the previous November.
Really?
Okay. Well, that's when I was speaking to Bandai.
Okay.
All right. Well, one final note, and that is when I went to the second screening where they had the director and whatnot, they had very obviously a cameraman set up, not the normal press photography, but a proper cameraman. So when they do bring this out on Blu-ray, they will have every possible extra included that they can think of, which is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But
no one else is
right,
and no other reason is going to make me want to buy it.
Right,
and John will be in the front row.
Was he there?
I didn't see him, but yeah,
I think it's this magical mustache.
It is. Anyway, let's move on.
Hello, this is Richard, aka Goobaba, and I am here in a coffee shop in Shinjuku Station with Carrie.
Hi.
And we're hanging out after discovering that if you tell someone to meet you at the Yodobashi Camera near Lumine, and you're in Shinjuku, you should probably make sure you mean the same Yodobashi Camera next to the same Lumine, or else it's going to take a while before you meet up. So we were a little bit tired when we first met up, but everything's okay now. We're hanging out, and we're here to do a Macross Vox Pop, just asking about history with Macross. So, Carrie, how did you first get interested in Macross?
Okay, this is probably a weird way to get into it. The very first Macross I saw was Macross Zero.
Huh.
And that's, it was alright. I think I watched Do You Remember Love a bit after that, but I was just so weirded out by the fact that, you know, singing was being used to win something that I kind of dropped Macross straight after that. Next Macross I saw was Frontier, and that was when I was in Japan, and did not really like the last episode for a silly reason which I won't mention here. But so I didn't really get into Macross again until after the movies came out, and when I saw the second one in the cinema, especially like Sayonara no Tsubasa, that's when I really got back into Macross, I think.
Okay, so what was it about Sayonara no Tsubasa that really spoke to you, I guess?
So I think it was just that what's the word for it? The way that Kawamori constructed it. It was after I watched Sayonara no Tsubasa that I really got what he meant by, I guess, they're all sort of different representations of the same real history. They're different fictional representations of it, and that you actually have to take all of them in and sort of realize that they're all exactly what he says, and that's when you get something that's when you understand what the story is about and what to take from each one.
Wait, am I meant to understand that you would even include Cheryl kissing the galaxy in that?
Yes, but you have to, what's the word for it, contextualize it, right? It's a shoujo manga, so it's written as a shoujo manga. And you take that as sort of, like, how much of a shoujo manga would you take as being real? Think about it that way.
Okay, I can accept that. Okay, so I think my next question was going to be, which is your favorite Macross, but I think you've already answered that. Am I right?
Yeah.
Are there any... What? Well, what have you seen now? Like, what of Macross have you seen or what haven't you seen?
I think of all the mainstream TV and OVA series, I've seen everything except Macross 7. I'm not sure if I'm ever going to touch that.
That is the eye of the needle that many do not make it through.
We'll see. Yeah, Richard might have convinced me to try 14 episodes, perhaps. We'll see what happens.
And, okay, so wrapping it up quickly, favorite female character?
I would probably have to say at the moment Cheryl, at the moment.
And favorite male character?
Probably Isamu. He's the most interesting in a certain way, I think, and not girly, thank God.
And both of them were characters in Sayonara no Tsubasa.
True, true.
Okay. Anyway, thank you for your time, and yeah, great talking to you.
Thanks. See you, everyone.
A little trip down to Yamato.
The annual open house?
The annual open showroom, or whatever you want to call it.
Yamato's open showroom.
They do it every year. They only do it once a year. It's the only time. Their showroom probably isn't even a showroom the rest of the year. It's just an office space.
No, that is their showroom.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Because it's not normally open to the public or anything.
No. You have to go up there with an appointment or be a ballsy foreigner like me and just show up there at some point.
So, okay.
All that.
So we went to Yamato's annual thing, which they announced only a few days in advance this time. It was really bad timing. And got in line, and yeah, they had their regular sale, you know, up to 50% off a lot of vouchers they had extra stock of. And then the big draw was the VF4G, which they had, what, four or five of them there, I'd say.
So the Yamato Open Showroom, they've had it probably about four times now. And each time it's getting smaller and smaller
and smaller.
Usually they have a staff of about eight people. And they're showing... For the Open Showroom, they primarily show the Macross stuff. But then they'll have other stuff on display. And people will talk about stuff. Usually the president's there and a couple of higher-ups. This time there was three staff members watching over the whole event.
Well, it was all planned really quickly because it wasn't announced until like a week before, I think.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise, I would have been able to go.
Oh, God.
I was in Scuba.
Sorry, I just realized not to break this, but they're doing the medley next.
That's
the FB7 medley playing.
Yeah, oh, no, I realized that.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, we went late. Well, I mean,
I
went late.
I couldn't find.
Okay.
I went, as always, I went a little bit later than everybody else because there's no reason to go early. And as you said, they have their little sales corner.
The sales.
They didn't really have that much this time.
Really?
Yeah, I picked up. What did I pick up? I picked up a Cavalier.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
For 6,000.
No.
This is not too bad. And I picked up a Max TV version for 4,000.
Max TV version.
If
one,
yeah.
So they had some of the
J, A,
I think
it
was J,
D,
J. Yeah.
Oh. Some of the things they had were the sound booster for the Fire Valk, 4,000.
Did you get one?
No, I already have one. Remember, I don't have the Valk, but I have the booster.
Yeah,
I know, but for 4,000, I might get another one so I can take apart and actually put speakers in it
next year.
Yeah, that's true. They'll
still
be there.
So they had the Macross Chronicles online order only.
Right.
Max. They
are
had
we
a
not
few
supposed
of those.
To say that?
Those were Ichimayan piece, but they weren't allowed to. It was kind of a secret sale.
Right.
And then they just had the display case of all the Valks they've done, along with some of their custom paint jobs. And they had the two tables set up where you can play with the older 160 Valks, a couple of Macross 7 Valks. You can free transform them. And then the other table was solely for the four.
Right, yeah. And they had, what, four or five of them at least?
I think four. There's four you can get your hands on.
And yeah, and that's the whole thing. They had them there. One of them, there were a couple of different, one of them had seemed to have been a prototype for longer than the others because it had parts broken off. And the,
yeah,
that was for the staff member there to show everyone. But they would show you how to transform it, go through it step by step with you. And we had, that was a pretty packed table for a while there.
Yeah.
Everyone crowded around, getting some hands-on experience with it. What was your impression with it as a toy?
Fighter mode is great. It's probably their best Valkyrie toy as of anything they've put out. Because the way this thing's transformed, all the heavy parts are in the back and they're all tucked in the fighter mode. So everything is securely locked in.
Right.
And all the weight fits in the palm of your hand. So then the wings are outside of the palm of your hand, and the nose is in front of your hand. So this is the one toy you can run around the room with going zoom, 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 zoom. And nothing's going to, no arm's going to slip off to the side. Nothing's going to pop off of the front.
Right. You're exactly correct. Two things that came to mind for me in fighter mode. First of all, it was almost seamless, from top. You can't see the obvious cracks and lines where it transforms.
Yeah.
It looked almost seamless, and it had enough weight to it, unlike normal Yamato Valks, that you wanted to play with the damn thing.
Yeah. And with this one, you can freely just hold it without it flying out of your hand. It just fits perfectly. The transformation is complicated, but if you transform toys, they're not that complicated. Yeah. There's only one part of the transformation you have to snap two pieces in together. That's a little tricky. That was it. But once it's snapped in, it stays locked in.
Right.
And there's a couple of bits and pieces that are meant to come off during transformation, because as you transform it, they'll pop off anyways.
So little missiles.
The missiles on the top and bottom, you can take those off, or they'll probably pop off on their own. Other than that, it's a solid piece. The transformation, again, you transformed it once. I found it to even be a solid transformation, not very loose.
Right. And it stands freely with no stand in Battleroid mode.
Okay, it stands straight up freely, but if anybody bumps the table, it's going to fall over because it's back heavy.
Right.
And it's got the ball jointed ankles, so as soon as the weight gets shifted, the ankles are going to start to arch and it'll fall. So it is going to need, if you don't want it to move, you're going to need something supporting it in the back.
Right, right.
Now, I'm not saying the ankles are loose. I'm just saying that
they will get loose.
They will get loose if you transform it enough. And with the weight, it is going to start to...
What is it with this fetish of die-cast ankle ball joints? I just don't get it. Bandai started it. Now Yamato's doing it as well. What really ruins the Fire Valkyries. The VF-19s.
Is that on the feet or the hips?
The feet.
Okay, I think these ones are plastic. I don't know, I'd have to look. But the bulk of the metal is in the leg joints from the knee. For the knee. Because it has so much articulation in just the knee joint alone. Because of the transformation is so obscure. And the other thing is, it's really poseable. It's probably the most posable Valk they've made for the bottom half. The upper half is fairly chunky and all you can do is move the arms. Gerwalk mode looks really nice, but again, you're still going to need some kind of support to keep it in the position you want, because again, the Gerwalk mode will either fall forward or fall behind. The only fiddly things were the hands. The type of transformation.
That's right, yep.
Because the forearm is set inside where, on the opposite side of the arm, it's set inside. So it's kind of, you have to pull it out, and then you pull the hands out. But as you're pulling the hands out, you end up pushing back down on the forearm. Forearm goes back into place, and then the ball jointed hand pops out every time. So right. That was a little bit fidgety. And you get two types of hands. You get solid fists, and you actually get articulated hands. But the articulated hands are only for Gerwalk and Batroid mode. They cannot be put into the forearm during transformation. They have to be removed.
Sounds a lot like the hands for the VF-171. Yeah. Did you ever...
No,
the hand retraction system for that is just so annoying that I find just taking out the hands and transforming it into fighter, and then when transforming it into fighter, when transforming from fighter to Batroid, then just putting the fixed pose hands is much better. Mm. And we got something.
All right. Well, I mean, overall, would you recommend it from what you've... I mean, that was pretty much the final version, and they are shipping technically on December 25th. They've said some orders may not be shipped until the 26th or 27th, and this is orders to online retailers and individuals. Is this toy worth getting?
Well, I didn't order it, so what is the price?
It's about 2.5 mil.
I think it's more than that, isn't it?
No, no.
Is it 30?
No. It's about 2.5.
That's probably with all those discounts. The early...
Mine was about 2.5, yeah.
Because I don't think it's... 2.5 is probably around the same price as the Nightmare, the VF-17. And I remember it being more expensive than that.
Right.
It's over 30.
Well, at this day and age, that's what you're going to pay for any company smaller than Bandai. So... Is it worth it? I'm a believer that it shouldn't transform, even though I like VFX, the VFX game. Them making the 4 transformable was lame. It should just be a fighter only mecha, or just a fighter. But, like I said, it's so seamless in fighter mode. I would get it just to display it in fighter mode.
Right.
Grok mode looks alright, and I'm just... The design of the Batroid mode to me just doesn't appeal, but it works. Right. So,
and we need to point out it does not come with a gun pod.
Yeah, no gun pod.
It's because it's got the built-in guns on the arms. All right then.
So no pew pew.
No, well, pew-pew. Just smaller pew pew.
Dual pew pew on the arms.
Yeah, double pew pew.
Yeah. And I guess at that point. You were saying that the instruction manual hasn't been made
yet? Well,
when we
went to the showroom, they said that, like, people were like, do you have a manual we can look at so you don't have to show us how to transform it? And they said, we haven't finished the instruction manual yet. And I was like, wow, they're not going to release until January. Which is why when a few days ago they said, okay, payment deadline is the 14th of December and we release on the 25th. I was like, oh, wow, okay, they're pushing it. Yeah. And, oh, sorry, do you have something? Oh,
I just wonder how god ugly the box is going to be.
Right. Well, the other thing, really briefly, I asked Yamato while we were there about the Basura guitar. Mm-hmm. And they said the problem is they've only got one model of the Basura guitar at the moment. Just the one. That's the one that we saw at the Macross exhibit. That's the one that Fukuyama has played the last three gigs I've seen him. And, of course, there was a Firebomber concert the weekend before, so they lent Fukuyama the guitar and he hadn't returned it yet. So they didn't have it at the showroom, but they said that
is that
ideally,
the same one,
no,
because
no,
Fukuyama
no, he's
has
been,
a few.
No. He's got the one that was made by fans for him, which you tune with a screwdriver. And then the last three gigs, he's been road testing the Yamato build because he's their overseer for the design of it.
Yeah, that's true.
And basically, they said that they would like no commitments. They would like to have it out around the middle of next year, but they said it's still a work in progress and. There is still only one prototype, and that's what Fukuyama actually plays at gigs. So,
is there any word on those Firebomber figure miniatures, the 160 scale things that they showed like 2 years ago now?
There's nothing that I saw, no.
Because they had a small Milan, they had a small Basura,
right.
Bihida, Bifidas. Really?
No, unfortunately not. But look, so. Are you going to get the VF4 or not?
Well, I can't anymore, can I? No, because I really don't like the look of that in robot mode. I love it in fighter mode, but... it's just too much to pay for something which I only half like.
It's not a DVD, a Blu-ray box set. It's too much to pay for.
That was too much. Yeah, I mean, that was too much to pay for as well at full price.
Right. Gotcha. Alright, well look, we're going to take a quick break and come back.
We're going to get the VF-19P though. P. I'm gonna get P.
Okay. What about those new the new Tamago ones? The Hasegawa.
Well, those are Kiss, and I don't have the skills to build those.
They look so cute.
They do, they do.
They're from Macross the Ride.
Yeah, I think the only reason they're doing those is because, for the Macross the Ride versions, is because they don't... Because they're the Egg Volks, you don't have to change the design as much as you would for one of the regular model kits, just because, like, the...
They are slightly modified, aren't they?
Just slightly, I think. Mm. But, like, you know, the VF-19 Advance from Macross the Ride is very, very different from a regular VF-19. But for the Egg Volk, you don't have to do much to it.
Right.
Yeah, those are actually made for the Dengeki Hobby 20th anniversary event.
Right.
That happened last month, mm-hmm. and those were the exclusives being sold at the event, which nobody bought.
Wait, they were exclusive?
Yeah,
they are. Yep, they were. Really? You can get them now, Dengeki Online, because they have a surplus of them because nobody bought them.
Really?
Yeah. They were made for the event, sold at the event. There was plenty left over. They've been online for over a month now, and I think now even HLJ has them.
Oh, interesting.
So they're just selling them out.
I really liked the green Macross the Ride VF-11
The Thunder Focus?
D, I think. Yeah, Thunder Focus.
Yeah.
The one that comes with a little camera instead of
the
a GoPro.
Yeah.
I really like the design of that.
Yeah.
I was almost going to buy the kit.
Hmm.
But that, again, as we talked about before, that's an expensive kit.
Because it's got that extra resin.
Right. But I've got in my hands right now a VF-11B Super Thunderbolt, the Hasegawa one, so that's making me happy.
So while Richard's happy, and we wouldn't have him anyway, we're going to take a quick break and come back with concert reports and a bit of talk about Macross 30.